The following is a presentation of Remnant.
Hi, this is Jerry from Remnant. Let's be honest, this life can be hectic, draining, and downright confusing. My hope is that by listening to this message, your life can be impacted by God's great love for you, and His love will give you wisdom, courage, and strength. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to a message from Pastor Jerry Godsey.
I want to talk to you tonight about the power of one. The power of one. What can one person accomplish? I think we have a tendency to think that God can't use us because we're just one person. Or, you know, we need to do something through the church. We need to do this or that. And no, God calls individuals. A church is made up of individuals. A church is made up of a bunch of people who come together to worship corporately and to serve God corporately. But in the end, we are individuals. And God deals with us individually. God deals with me about things in my heart. He deals with you, things in your heart. And they're not the same things because we're not the same people. So let's pray, and we're going to talk about the power of one tonight. God, thanks. We love you, Father, and we ask that you would just speak to our hearts, God. God, I pray that the men will be encouraged and challenged tonight, that whatever comes out of me, God, has come from you. Thanks, God. Bless our time now. We ask it in your name. Amen. Alvin York was one of the most decorated soldiers of the U.S. Army in World War I. During a heated battle, 6 soldiers were killed, 3 were injured. After this, York found himself in command of the 7 remaining soldiers. Though he didn't act alone, his leadership had a tremendous impact on those who were with him. He received the Medal of Honor for leading an attack on a German machine gun nest, taking 32 machine guns, killing 20 German soldiers, and capturing 132 others. Alvin York was one bad dude. His story proves that one person can make a difference. Now, if you've been around Christianity any length of time, you may have heard the name D.L. Moody. The Moody Bible Institute. D.L. Moody was a great man, maybe one of the greatest preachers America's ever had. So you may have heard of him. But have you ever heard of Edward Kimball? Not the guy from The Fugitive. That was Dr. Kimball. That's a whole different thing. No. Edward Kimball was a shoe salesman. And he worked in a shoe store with some guy named Dwight. And he led Dwight to Jesus. Now, that's really all we know about him. By the way, Dwight, that's the D in D.L. Moody. If the shoe salesman had never led Dwight Moody to Christ, you might not have ever heard of Dwight Moody either, D.L. Moody either. See, it just takes one person in God's will at the right time. Look at all the souls that have been saved under D.L. Moody's ministry and continue to be saved under things like the Moody Institute and all those things. Think about all of that. And it started because a shoe salesman shared his story. Not bad. Not bad at all. The Bible's full of stories where one person had an impact, a positive impact in others. God used some little shepherd boy, you may have heard of him, named David, who knocked out a 9-foot-tall giant with a rock. I don't know which is more amazing, that he did it, that he killed the giant, or he killed him with a rock. He used a reluctant servant, you might have heard of him, his name was Moses, to deliver his people from Israel, from Pharaoh. He used one rebellious preacher who, granted, had to spend some time in the belly of a fish to reach a whole town called Nineveh. He used a great persecutor of the church to reach the Gentiles with the gospel. Paul, who wrote a lot of the New Testament, started out as Saul of Tarsus. And the first time we see Saul of Tarsus is he is watching the first martyr die. And he's the one who gave the permission for it to happen. See, it just takes one person. You're one person. So in the text we're going to talk about tonight, this is one of my favorite stories out of the Old Testament. It's about the king's son. It's about King Saul's son, and his name is Jonathan. And Jonathan is one of those guys that just decides that, you know what? Let's just see what happens. But he trusted the Lord, and through him the Lord brought a great victory. And that's usually where we leave this story. That Jonathan tested, and we'll talk about that, what it all is in a minute of it. We leave it there, but there's something more that happened after Jonathan and his armor bearer did what they did. Through his story, we see the positive impact that one person can have on others. So what I want to do is I want to take the broad picture and then keep working our way closer. Almost like one of those things where you see the big picture of the map, and then it keeps focusing in, and then it's some like dude sitting there reading a paper on a park bench waiting for a spy to come meet him or something. So the first thing we're going to look at is the war. There's a war going on. Look at 1 Samuel chapter 13. Saul selected 3,000 special troops from the army of Israel and sent the rest of the men home. He took 2,000 of the chosen men with him to Michmash and the hill country of Bethel. The other 1,000 went with Saul's son Jonathan to Gibeah in the land of Benjamin. So Saul chose 3,000 men from the forces of Israel. These are like the big guys, you know, they're good to go. The Philistines, though, are the enemies of the Israelites. The Philistines have a bigger army. In fact, the Philistines had 3,000 chariots, 6,000 dudes to ride the chariots, and as many warriors as the grains of sand on the seashore. Now, that may be a little bit of a push, but they had a bunch. And the men of Israel, many of them became fearful. They hid in caves, they hid in holes, they hid in cisterns. Others crossed over Jordan and hid in the land of Gad. We find ourselves in a war and we're outnumbered. We find ourselves in a place where, look, let's be honest, if you work in any place, if you, you know, maybe even in your family, you may be the only Christian that you know, or you may be one of the few Christians you know where you work. And you may feel outnumbered. Just remember, it's not how many, it's the quality. And that's we were talking in our small group time. We got to be quality. We got to be something amazing. We know that the victory is ours. So I put it this way. Throughout the Bible, God's people were frequently outnumbered. Things are no different today. Here's the thing, though. We don't fight the way the world fights. And that's why I wrote a column a couple of years ago and kind of got a couple of people barking at me about it. Because I said that I don't think that Jesus would have carried a picket sign. He was about love and about relationships. I can't see him carrying a picket sign, you know, with pictures of aborted fetuses and stuff on it. I just say I can't see him doing that. And I got some pushback. Not from sinners. They didn't care. I got pushback from Christians. But you know, brother, if you would talk to us before you write these things, well, you know what? God and I took care of that. When I have to involve you, then I'll quit writing the column. Because it was me and God. It's easy for us to get caught up in all of that stuff. We need to fight the way God wants us to fight. And you can find that in Ephesians 6:12. We are not fighting against flesh and blood enemies, but against evil rulers and authorities of the unseen world, against mighty powers in this dark world, and against evil spirits in the heavenly places. We are surrounded. It's a spiritual battle. You may think that you're fighting with your cousins, or you may think that the guy at work that doesn't like you because you're a Christian is a jerk. You know what? He may be, but that's a spiritual battle. And if you fight back the way everybody else does, by getting in his face and by being ornery and bad, You're not fighting your battles God's way. We need to look at our lives as a spiritual battle. If we can think about the battle that we're doing as it's God's war, it's God's battle, and we're being used by him, it makes it a lot easier. So you've got the war. Now let's talk about the troops. Saul and his troops were encamped at Gibeah. At this point, his forces had dwindled from several thousand down to 600. And the 600 that were there were scared. They are scared. They're in fright for their lives. They're hiding out. Some of them had even gone over to the Philistine army. They're just scared to death. Then there's a guy named Jonathan. Look at 1 Samuel chapter 14. I love Jonathan. I think Jonathan's so cool. One day Jonathan said to his armor bearer, "Come on, let's go over to where the Philistines have their outpost." And the armor bearer said, "Excuse me? Yeah, let's go over to where the Philistines are camped. Let's go check it out." Jonathan didn't tell his father what he was doing. Meanwhile, Saul and his 600 men were camped on the outskirts of Gibeah around the pomegranate tree at Migron. Among Saul's men was Ahijah the priest, who was wearing the ephod, the princely vest. The priestly vest. I'm glad we don't have to wear ephods on Sundays. It just sounds uncomfortable. I'm glad we don't have to wear suits and ties either. That just sounds uncomfortable. Ahijah was the son of what? Ahijah was the son of Ichabod's brother Ahitub. Ahitub. Yeah, that's not a good name. Anyway, son of Phias, son of Eli, the priest of the Lord who had served at Shiloh. No one realized that Jonathan left the Israelite camp. To reach the Philistine outpost, Jonathan had to go down between two rocky cliffs that were called Bozez and Sinna. The cliff on the north was in front of Michmash, and the one on the south was in front of Geba. "Let's go across to the outpost of those pagans," Jonathan said to his armor bearer. I love this. Perhaps. Some versions say maybe. Perhaps the Lord will help us, for nothing can hinder the Lord. He can win a battle whether he has many warriors or only a few. Look what the armor bearer says. "Do what you think is best. I'm with you completely, whatever you decide." Jonathan had a loyal servant who was his armor bearer. An armor bearer was an officer selected by kings in general because of loyalty and bravery. He was expected to carry the king's armor and to stand by him in a time of danger. When the king died, more often than not, so did the armor bearer. That's exactly what this guy did. Look again at verse 7. "Do what you think is best," the armor bearer replied. "I'm with you completely, whatever you decide." You know, if we look at churches today, it seems like, especially among men, they're declining. They're thinning themselves out. And men especially are falling by the wayside, or they're marginalizing themselves because they refuse to be godly men. They go to church to make sure their wife doesn't yell at them, but they don't really get anything out of it other than that. Guys, that's not who we're supposed to be. We shouldn't be cowering in fear over by a pomegranate tree. We should be with Jonathan and say, "You know what? Let's go kick some tail. Let's see what happens." Where are the men? They're going to rise up and say, "You know what? I'm tired of doing this halfway. I'm tired of just surviving spiritually. I want to grow. I want to prosper. I want to push new ground. I want to take over something." We've got to link up together, guys. We need to be together. We need to be arm in arm, shoulder to shoulder, standing next to each other, our shields next to each other, holding each other up, guys. The armor bearer was there to support Jonathan. We need to be there to support each other. We see each other tomorrow at church. Are we going to talk about the Ram game, or are we going to talk about what God had did for us this weekend? I'm not saying you can't do both, but oftentimes we get stuck talking about more about other things than we do about God. Let's talk about God sometimes. Let's get our guys together and let's let people know. Let the men in this room know. You know what? If you got an issue, if you got a problem that I can help you with, you call me and I'm there. Whatever's going on in your life, I want to help you. Because guys, you can't do it alone. You can't. This whole idea of the Lone Ranger, that's just dumb. It's time for us to be men who support other men. Satan's always looking to attack. He wants to attack you, your family, your church, and he wants to attack your fellow soldiers. We've got to hold each other up. Now, every battle, there's an enemy. Look at the enemy. 1 Samuel 14:8. All right, then, Jonathan told him, we'll cross over and let them see us. If they say to us, stay where you are, we'll kill you, then we'll stop and not go up to them. But if they say, come on up and fight, then we'll go up. That will be the Lord's sign that will help us defeat them. When the Philistines saw them coming, they shouted, look, the Hebrews are crawling out of their holes. These guys, the Philistines, were so used to watching the Israelites cower in cisterns and holes and hang out by a pomegranate tree, they thought they were a bunch of chickens. So here comes Jonathan and the armor bearer poking their head up like a gopher. Like a prairie dog or something. What's going on here? They had all these chariots. They had charioteers. They were confident in their abilities. They're not worried about one dude and an armor bearer. By the way, there's one sword between them. At that time, there was only two swords in Israel. Saul had one. Jonathan had the other. So the armor bearer is like, okay, I'll go with you. I'm kind of short a sword, but I'll go with you. That's scary. That's kind of frightening. If I go into battle, I want something to fight with. You know, I'll pick up a rock, maybe hook a rock. It's easy for you to say, let's go taunt them. You got a sword. Nah. Look, they're coming out of their holes. We have an adversary that's intense. And he's intimidating. He has thousands of years of experience, and he's powerful, but he's not as powerful as the God we serve. The devil puts these things on, and we act like, oh, we have to hide by the pomegranate tree because the devil's coming. No. He's already lost. He's just trying to take as many people with him as he can. It's up to us to stand up and say, you know what? I ain't scared of you. Because my God is greater. Our enemy is cunning. He has great strategy and desires to affect our ability. And they have those ability, and all of this stuff he does affects our will to fight. In the latter verses of chapter 13, we're told that the Philistines cut off the hands of the blacksmiths of the Hebrews. So they had no one to sharpen their spears, sharpen their swords, and they'd be greatly impacted in battle. When the Israelites were taken captive, one of the many times they were taken captive in the Old Testament, they poked out the right eye of every Israelite. Either the right eye or the left eye. And the reason they did that was because it cut off their depth perception. They did whatever they could to harm the ability of the other person to fight. Makes sense. Blacksmith isn't going to forge out a new sword if he doesn't have any hands. But they don't kill him because he's still useful for other things. Amazing. And the devil comes to us and he wants to poke out our eye. And he wants to cut off our hands. He wants us to think, he wants us to feel weak and powerless against him. And in reality, he's the one that's weak and powerless because God is greater. And guys, we need to never lose sight of that. When you start feeling like your sin just is overwhelming you and I can't help myself, you know what? Come on. We're in a battle. Last night, I talked about the breastplate of righteousness, the belt of truth, the shoes of peace, the shield of faith, the helm of salvation, and the sword of the Spirit. What is all that stuff? You don't put on the armor to walk in a parade. Look how shiny we are. You put on the armor to go to battle. You put on the armor to go do business. Guys, if God's given us armor, if he's equipped us with weapons, he expects us to use them. We are in a constant battle, and we must remain in contact with our commanding officer through prayer. We must put on our armor, and we must make sure our sword is sharp, in hand, and ready for battle. So let's look at the battle. Israel's troops had diminished to a very small number of men. Then Jonathan and his armor bearer left those 600 guys, who were all scared anyway, went to fight alone. But they had a drive, and they had a desire to fight for what was right. The battle we're in is not an easy one. In fact, the first thing you need to know is our battle is an inconvenient one. Our battle is inconvenient. 1 Samuel 14:4, to reach the Philistine outpost. He went to the outpost. To reach the Philistine outpost, Jonathan had to go down between two rocky cliffs that were called Bozez and Senna. The cliff on the north was in front of Michmash, and the one on the south was in front of Geba. Let's go across the outpost of those pagans. He didn't have an easy way to get there. He had to squeeze down between rocks, you know, and he's exposed to the enemy a couple of times. Look, this was not an easy thing to do. And sometimes when we serve God, we're literally, like Jonathan, we're literally between a rock and a hard place. And that makes us want to give up. Well, you know, I didn't know it was going to be this hard to be a Christian. Really? You didn't know that taking the narrow road was going to be a lot harder than taking the wide road? The wide road leads to destruction. Look, if you want to die in your sin and you want to go to hell, man, there's plenty of ways to do that. You want to make sure that you're on God's road? It's going to go through some cliffs. It's going to go through some tight spots. And it's going to strip your hide sometimes. Like Jonathan, we got to remember who we serve. We may look at it and see their insurmountable odds. Oh, I can never be perfect. Maybe not. But you can be more perfect than you are today. And tomorrow, you can be more perfect than you were the day before. And the day after, and the day after, and the day after. Guys, it's just pushing forward. We got to sacrifice our desires. We got to overcome our fears, and we've got to press on. We got to keep moving forward. No matter how difficult the situation must be, we've got to press on. And our enemy, Satan, will do everything he can to try and keep your will down. He'll do everything he can to try and break your will, to break your spirit. But he can't break your will and break your spirit if you stay connected to God. Think about it. If I'm connected to God, what did we just sing a minute ago? That he'll never let us go? He'll never let us go? If you stay connected to God, aren't you going to be okay? When my kids were little, we would... First of all, you'd always see these kids with leashes. You know, like they're walking a Cocker Spaniel or something. Dude, that's your four-year-old. That's not a dog. So we would grab their hand, and I would tell my sons, hold on to me. We'll get through this. You go to like a big crowd like Disneyland or something. Hold on to my hand. Don't let go. And as long as they held on, we were okay. As long as we held on, they didn't get lost. As long as you're holding on to God, you're going to be fine, guys. You've just got to keep going. Because let me tell you something. God is not the God that goes backwards. God is the God that moves forward. So when you're walking along and God says, okay, look, this is kind of a crowded place, or maybe this is kind of a tight squeeze, and hey, this might cost you a little bit of skin, the worst thing you can do is let go, because then you're in the middle of that all by yourself. And we know how that works out. Usually not good. In fact, never good. Our battle is an intense battle. It's got to be pretty intense for Jonathan the armor bearer. Maybe more intense for the armor bearer than Jonathan, because he doesn't have a sword. Imagine the adrenaline pumping. How exciting that would be. When I was still a reserve deputy, we had a call out of Glamis. And so we're doing 90 in a Chevy Tahoe. It's not really meant to go that fast. Rolling code, and the sirens going off, and you don't see the lights, but you know they're on, and cars are getting out of our way, and some of the cars aren't getting out of our way. And by the time we got to where we were going, it was already done by the time we got there, which was kind of disappointing, because we had to come all the way from Raleigh. And we're hauling out there. By the time we get out there, you get out of the car, and you're like, okay, let's go. Like a little chihuahua that's all excited. Let me chew on something. Then you got to kind of settle. Okay, crud. Can you imagine the adrenaline that's going through Jonathan the armor bearer? We don't know what's about to happen. Hey, we're going to stick our heads up, and let's see what happens. If they say, hey, stay away, we're going to kill you, okay, we'll stay away. But if they say, come on, up and fight, let's rock and roll, baby. One sword and all, let's go. When you enter the battle for God, things are going to get intense. The enemy's going to mount a vicious attack. There'll be times when it seems like defeat is imminent, but it isn't, because God is going to win. God is greater. God is stronger. If the devil can intimidate you and make you hide by the pomegranate tree, he's going to do that, because nothing good happens by the pomegranate tree. Pomegranates aren't even worth eating. I have a pet peeve about pomegranates. They're horrible. They're hard as a baseball. They're hard as a baseball. They stain your clothes and your hands, and they're bitter. I got a feeling that if God looks at people eating pomegranates, say, you know, I never really intended you to eat that. Nah, they're not. They're wrong. I've never met a pomegranate I liked. The devil's going to attack you because he knows who you're fighting for. He's going to attack you because he knows what's going on. But, again, I think I've said it like 45 times at this point, God is greater. You're getting that through your skull at this point? God is greater? Maybe you're on the brink of surrender tonight. Maybe you just have fought all you can and thought, you know what, I'm done. But you know what? The best way out of that is to look to the Lord. The best way out of that is to see where God's taken you. Because if you're alone tonight, it's because you're not following God. It's not because God has abandoned you. Guys, that's important for you to know. And that doesn't mean that everything in your life is going to go hunky-dory. Things are still going to happen. You're still going to have things you have to deal with. That's part of the growth process too, unfortunately. We think it would be great if God would just snap his fingers and all of our troubles would go away. But it wouldn't. We'd become like a Kardashian or something. Spoiled brats, you know, just with a sense of entitlement, no sense of responsibility. I think I'm safe saying that, because I don't think the Kardashians listen to my messages. They should. Look at 1 Samuel 14, 12, 13. Then the men from the outpost shouted, Jonathan, come on up here, and we'll teach you a lesson. Come on, climb right behind me, Jonathan said to his armor bearer, for the Lord will help us defeat them. Really? What are you basing that on, Sparky? You got one sword between you, and there's a lot more of them than you, and you're saying, let's go. The Lord's already given to us. Let's go. As a result of his steadfastness, Jonathan saw something amazing. He saw the Lord show up and fight for him. When we're faithful in the fight, we can see some amazing things as well. I love this part, the victory. Everybody likes a win. 1 Samuel 14, 14. They killed some 20 men and all, and their bodies were scattered over about half an acre. They just went wading through them. One sword, one dude, and just started wading through them. Eh, die, you Philistine scum. Killed 20 of them. Suddenly, panic broke out in the Philistine army, both in the camp and in the field, including even the outposts and raiding parties. And just then, an earthquake struck, and everyone was terrified. Saul's lookouts in Gibeah of Benjamin saw a strange sight. Imagine this. They're cowering in fear up by the pomegranate tree, and they look down and think, well, something's going on down there. Well, that's odd. The vast army of Philistines began to melt away in every direction. Call the roll and find out who's missing, Saul ordered. It's your kid. When they checked, they found that Jonathan, his armor bearer, was gone. Saul shouted to Ahijah, bring the ephod here. For at that time, Ahijah was wearing the ephod in front of the Israelites. But while Saul was talking to the priest, the confusion in the Philistine camp grew louder and louder. So Saul said to the priest, never mind, let's get going. The first thing Saul's done right. Well, let's consult the ephod and see if... No, just go down there and do something. You've had enough time by the pomegranate tree. If you're really a leader, that's not where you're supposed to be anyway. You're supposed to be wading into the battle like your kid did. Saul and all his men rushed out to the battle and found the Philistines killing each other. There was terrible confusion everywhere. So here's their guys sitting around the tree, and they say, "Hey, Bob, something going on down there. Well, let's check it out." And they look and say, "You know what? That's something you don't see every day. They're killing each other." And then the earthquake came. Then they got really confused, and they started, I still know Jesus, even though an earthquake happens. I don't think I'm going to kill him unless he's standing in my way and I can't get out of the building, and then all bets are off. They're killing each other. They're all confused. They're messed up. As soon as they entered the heat of battle, the Philistines fell before Jonathan. As soon as we get into the thick of battle, the devil falls before us because he cannot withstand, he cannot beat God's power. He just can't do it. So Saul sees the Philistines, and because Saul has decided, okay, well, they're already beating themselves, we ought to go down there and, you know, see what we can do. Oh, and there'll be plenty of people like that. You'll win a great spiritual victory, and all of a sudden, everybody and their dog. It's like somebody winning the lottery. The next thing you know, we got 30 cousins they didn't know they had. Oh, hey. Hey, Jerry. I'm your long-lost third cousin on your mom's side, and your brother. Shut up. You get nothing. And there will be all kinds of people that want to get in on your victory. They want to ride your coattails. And you know what? That's okay. Because you've got victory. We got to remember who we're fighting for. And most importantly, we must remember who is fighting for us. Through God's word, we find that victory is possible. Like Jonathan, if we're faithful to the Lord, we can have a positive impact. Now, usually this is where we leave this story. That Jonathan, did great, and they killed a bunch of Philistines. The Philistine army killed each other, and they're a bunch of knuckleheads, and God's great. But there's more. But wait, there's more. For $19.95, I'll send you. Okay, no. Because what comes after all of this is the resurgence. Look at 1 Samuel 14:21. Even the Hebrews who had previously gone over to the Philistine army, what? A bunch of traitors? They revolted and joined in with Saul, Jonathan, and the rest of the Israelites. Likewise, the men of Israel who were hiding in the hill country of Ephraim joined the chase when they saw the Philistines running away. So the Lord saved Israel that day, and the battle continued to rage even beyond Beth Aven. What happened? It started with one guy and his buddy. He said, "Hey, let's go see what we can do. Let's go cause some trouble." They kill 20 dudes, and then it gets really crazy. And the army comes in, and the army says, "Oh, well, let's go join the battle." And then even the guys who had quit joined the battle and ran in. One guy made a decision and said, "Hey, let's go see what's going on." And the spillover effect is that the army gets involved and the king gets involved. And then even the guys who deserted, even the guys who gave up hope, even the guys who had run for their lives just a few hours or a few days before, turn around and join the battle. And they kept in the battle. Why? Because they saw what the power of one was all about. And you got to know there are guys that said, "You know, if Jonathan can do that, and God's on his side, then God's on our side, we're going to do more." Think about the people that you know, the people that have been hurt by other churches, or the people that have fallen by the wayside. If they see your life changing, that says something to them. If they see your life being moved in a positive direction, they see you winning victories, they're going to want to get out on victories. I give my brother a lot of grief, my brother Tim, because he was a Dolphins fan for a long time. Then the Patriots won a couple Super Bowls. Now he's a hardcore Patriots fan. And I told him, you're just a front runner. You're not really a Patriots fan. You just, and when the Patriots start losing, he'll find somebody else. You could tell a real fan like me, because I got bear stuff in my office and they haven't won anything in a long time. Charger fans, Cub fans, although now, you know, Cub fans have, now there's a million more Cub fans because they won the World Series. You know what? God's bandwagon can handle a few more people. And yeah, they may have gotten discouraged. They may have been hurt and they've run away and they hid. But when they see your life changing, that's going to give them encouragement. Now here's the thing. If you don't change, how are they ever going to see that? If you stay the same as you are you still kind of, you know, kind of take your Christian life half seriously? If you're willing for your wife and your kids to be more spiritual than you are? Nothing changes in their lives. In fact, every time you say no to God, other people are impacted by your disobedience. Our lives are like a pond. You throw a rock in the middle of the pond and the ripples go all the way to the edge. When you're disobedient to God, the ripples in your life go all the way through your family, everything about them. Guys, we've got to decide that we're going to be a positive ripple. Because here's the flip side of that. The flip side is that each time one of God's children says yes and obeys him, people are impacted in a positive way. Guys, this whole weekend has been about God wanting to change your life and to use you for something positive. And you've just got to grab onto that. How is it possible? Is it really possible for you? Is it really possible for you to be the one? Can you really be Jonathan? Yeah. You know why? Because God doesn't care about your talents. He doesn't care about your abilities. He cares about your availability. Isaiah chapter 6, verse 8, then I heard the Lord asking, whom should I send as a messenger to this people? Who will go for us? And I said, here I am. Send me. How is it possible for God to do so many amazing things? Because people answer his call. Jeremiah is a pastor. I'm a pastor. Years ago for both of us, God said, this is where I want you to go. And we answered the call. And I know I can speak for Jeremiah's ministry. God has been good in mine. There are people that maybe I never would have met the Lord if it hadn't been for my ministry to other people. And it just was like a ripple effect. I told you before that my niece, who I really love, Becca, she called me and she's getting married. And I said, Becca, you can't marry this guy. I've never met him. She said, no, it's okay. You mentored him. What? If I never met him, how did I mentor him? When I was youth pastor in El Cajon back in the 80s, I mentored a kid in my youth group named Scott Stewart. Scott, still serving the ministry, he's teaching in schools, still serving the ministry today. But I poured my life into Scott. He's one of the kids that just blossomed, man. Scott ends up, he was youth pastor for me in a couple of different churches, and then he went on to Hemet. And while Scott is a youth pastor in Hemet, some kid named Brian Rose is in his youth group. And he sees something in Brian, and he pours his life into Brian. And Brian is the one who married Becca. That story still kills me. Because when I mentored Scott, I had no idea that was going to pay off for my family years later. And he is the best dude. He's so cool. Love to have him as part of my family. Treats his wife like a queen. Good husband, great dad. They have two of their own kids. They adopted two kids from a super troubled home. See, it's a ripple effect. Life is a ripple effect. If you answer God's call, amazing things are going to happen. If you answer God's call, remnant, great things are going to happen at remnant. And if great things happen at remnant, great things can happen in the city of El Centro and Imperial and all the surrounding communities. And who knows? Perhaps God will do something great in the state of California because of this little church in Podunk, El Centro, California. Perhaps God would do something great. You know what? It's possible. But do you believe it? See, the question isn't why can't it happen now? My question is why isn't it happening now? Not, you know, well, maybe it'll happen, maybe it won't. Why isn't it happening? It's not happening because we're not like Isaiah, standing up and saying, here I am, send me. Guys, it's time to paint or get off the ladder. It's time to get serious. I came across this quote and I love it. Someone has said, I am only one, but I'm still one. I cannot do everything, but still I can do something. And because I cannot do everything, I will not refuse to do the something that I can do. What I can do, I ought to do. What I ought to do, by the grace of God, I will do. Can't do everything. I can't change the world. My favorite sayings, you don't have to change the world. You just have to change the part that rubs up against you. See, you guys all know people that I don't know. What are you doing to reach their lives? What are you doing to show them God's love? What are you doing to show them the impact of one? The power of one. And I don't care where you are in your walk with Jesus. You may not have accepted Christ yet. Obviously, that's your first step. And look, it's not heavy theology or anything else. It's saying, Jesus, I want my life to change. I want to be better. I've walked this way on my own, and I've seen that it usually doesn't pan out. So, God, I want to be better. I want your power. I want your love. Just ask him to forgive you. But most of us here, we've been Christians a while. In fact, you may have been Christian long enough for it to kind of start ebbing away. Been Christian long enough that you're kind of used to it. And you're not really taking any new ground anymore. You know what? Let's go to the enemy's camp and see what happens. Let's stick our head up, see what they say. Let's cause some damage. I said it last night. Let's cause some damage. I want to go wreck stuff. I want Satan to come at me and say, hey, dude, I'm sorry, man. This is going to hurt. It's going to hurt you really bad. And I love the fact that I feel that way about my ministry. All these years of being a youth pastor and a pastor, I really feel like I've just been taking a bat to Satan's kingdom. I'm knocking out windows. I'm kicking in doors. I'm just tearing stuff up. And every time somebody comes to Jesus, that's another win. That's another notch in my gun belt. Guys, it's time for us to get excited. It's time for us to decide that we may not be able to do everything, but that's not going to keep us from doing something. One more time. I'm only one, but still, I am one. I cannot do everything, but still, I can do something. Because I cannot do everything, I will not refuse to do the something that I can do. What can I do? What I can do, I ought to do. What I ought to do, by the grace of God, I will do. That's a great closing prayer for us tonight. God, I can't do everything, but I'm not going to let that stop me from doing the thing I can do. You know what? I'm never going to, I don't think, it hasn't happened yet. I'm 58. So I think my time is running out for this to happen. I don't think I'm ever going to lead a big stadium kind of event like Billy Graham or you know the guy from Harvest. I mean, nobody's going to come to Jack Murphy Stadium to watch me preach. It's still Jack Murphy Stadium. I don't care. Nobody's gonna fill up Dodger Stadium to watch me preach either. And that's okay, because that's not my job. My job is to make sure that this group of guys that I'm talking to tonight, that I can help you make changes in your heart. I may not be able to change all of San Diego, but with God's grace, I can help 15 guys in Boulevard tonight. And you know what? The reward is the same. I get to heaven, God's going to look at Billy Graham and say, Billy, whew, great job, dude. Led a lot of people to the Lord, man. A lot of cool stuff happened. Good job. Here's your reward right over here. And I'm going to go stand in front of God. He's going to say, Jerry, good job, dude. I say, oh, but I didn't fill stadiums. Nah, I didn't ask you to. Didn't need you to. But you talked to those guys on Boulevard that night, and lives got changed. The power of one took over. And that's all that's important. Are you ready? Are you ready to stake your claim to what God's going to do? You can't do everything, but doggone it, you can do something.
You've been listening to a presentation of Remnant. For more information, visit us online at remnantchurchiv.com. You build a mighty fortress, 10,000 burdens high. Love is here.